It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If President Trump had more than one motive for his alleged conduct, such as the pursuit of personal political advantage, how should the Senate consider more than one motive in its assessment of Article 1?
So once you're into mixed motive land, it's clear that their case fails. There can't possibly be an impeachable offense at all.
Is it true that Sean Misko, Abigail Grace, and the alleged whistleblower were employed by or detailed to the National Security Council during the same time period between January 20, 2017 and the present?
We have no knowledge of that other than what's in those public reports, and I don't want to get into speculating about that.
If President Obama had evidence that Mitt Romney's son was being paid $1 million per year by a corrupt Russian company, and Mitt Romney had acted to benefit that company, would Obama have authority to ask that that potential corruption be investigated?
The hypothetical is a bit off because it presumes that in that hypothetical that President Obama was acting corruptly, or there was evidence he was acting corruptly with respect to his son.
All right, that's just a little bit of what happened yesterday. Sandy Rios with you. I have to say, you know, we spent, 3 days listening, or five or six days listening to the House managers first and then the president's defense team over the weekend bringing the case. Yesterday was a turn of events, and that's when the Chief Justice, that was his voice that you heard early on, he took the questions from the senators, asked, he would say, this is a question from fill in the blank, and he would read the question, and then it would be addressed either to the House managers or to the president's defense team. And let me tell you, it was fascinating. Did I watch all 8 hours? No, I didn't have a chance to do that, but I watched as much as I could, and they are going to do the same thing today. And if ever there was a day that you paid attention and you tuned in and watched it, it's today. For one thing, I'm finding just in my own, when I try to then bring information to you, there is so much coming out that even these reporters and news outlets that have so many more resources than we do are not covering it as thoroughly as they should. And you're going to miss a lot. And I think even if you tune in some, you're going to hear some stuff that, you know, is really important on both sides. And besides, it's interesting. It goes quickly and there's a lot of drama in there. So I just can't say enough about the importance of you, if there's ever a time that you should be watching, it's today to hear those questions and answers, because it's very, very interesting. Also then, of course, tomorrow, you know, they're going to be voting on whether to call witnesses. You know, the Democrats are desperate to call John Bolton, and the Republicans are saying, if you're going to do that, then we're going to call the Bidens, we're going to call the whistleblower, and on the list goes. But of course, the fear is, and the speculation. Well, the fear is, there is a fear. The fear is that the there are too many unknowns in the Senate. I'll just say this personally. This is my personal view. I have said repeatedly to you that I don't trust the Senate as a place to get a fair hearing. There are no House Freedom Caucus members over there. There are a handful of really fine senators, but it is just a handful, and the rest of them, including McConnell, who has handled this, I think, well. I have to say that I do think he has, but I still, when push comes to shove, he's not going to fight. He's not. It's not principle. It's about, you know, control of the Senate. It's his body. It's the honor of the Senate. That's the thing that drives him. It's not about what's right and wrong on behalf of the president or the country, really. And so it's a very dangerous platform and place. Plus, as the Democrats have I would say this: as the Democrats have continued to make their case, they have continued now to begin to look more and more foolish. Initially, I thought they were doing a powerful job of delivering their message, and right or wrong, it was propaganda well delivered. But last night, I heard the wheels coming off the bus. They began to sound desperate and silly, really, in terms of their arguments. That's my personal opinion. I initially was critical of the White House, the president's attorney, some personal, some White House, because they were so emotionless, passionless, and that bothered me. But I have to say, in the long run, like last night, they were making the case just very factually, very calmly. It was very effective when paired against, I think, Adam Schiff's team, who are beginning to sound desperate and silly and sort of throwing everything against the wall to see if anything will stick. They even, then started talking about bribery and extortion last night, which has never been part of the discussion, just anything to try to raise a red flag. And so I think what's happened is that the staid, that's the kindest word I can think of, sitting Republicans, I could think of other words, but I have to measure them, so I won't. Too lazy, really, and having sat there too long to really care enough to want to trouble themselves by actually fighting a fight. I actually think they've had a front row seat to seeing how rapidly the Democrats have moved to the left and how dangerous it is, even to them personally, and their esteemed seat in the U.S. Senate. I mean, I just think it's shaken them up a bit, and for that I'm grateful. Because they have had a front row seat to what the rest of the country has already seen, and that is this attempt to really undermine the constitutional order of this country in order to take power, and that's really what the left is doing. And I think the senators, maybe even the slow to come to it ones, are beginning to see this. Lisa Murkowski, I think, we don't know, this is not on record, but we think that that she may even be inclined now to cooperate with Senator McConnell and not call for witnesses. Now you say, well, why wouldn't we call for witnesses? Some are arguing, look, let's have them. Let's have this out. Let's air this because there's plenty that hasn't been told. In fact, I want to get into that, a little bit of that in a second. And let the president be fully vindicated. And in my heart of hearts, I would like that too, except that what's at stake here, if the Democrats should strike a chord or find a vein of some sort because they're mining for anything that they can. This would, the wrong vote or the wrong moment could cause President Donald Trump to be removed from office. And I think that is a price too high to pay to take the risk. That's my personal opinion. And I think it is a risk, even though I think the truth is on President Trump's side. And so they're going to be voted. They are, the Senate is going to be voting tomorrow after they have this 8 hours of questions and answers again today. They'll vote tomorrow on whether to call witnesses. And it doesn't look like they're going to get them at this point. Now, of course, anything can change. We have 24 hours, and you know how things go. And I'm sure that the Democrats have something else up their sleeve. I doubt John Bolton was the last card. And by the way, John Bolton's publisher was the same publicist that published James Comey's book. And it looks as though the White House had communicated with John's attorneys that his book contained too much top secret information and he could not publish it. And let me also say that it is very unseemly and untoward that a national security advisor for a president should write a tell-all book, especially, in real time, to be published in March before an election of his former boss in November. No national security advisor has ever done that. You might recall that Barack Obama's national security advisor wrote a book. I'm blanking on his name. I see his face, can't think of his name, but he wrote it, but he delayed publishing it for a reason. In fact, he was criticized then because it was still too close to Obama's term in office, but he waited until he was way out of office and time had passed. It really is unseemly that Ambassador Bolton, what I used to always call him, I guess Secretary Bolton now, I should say, has done this at this time. And people are wondering, why this is. And some have asked me, because some of you may know that I've known Mr. Bolton for a long time. And it's been very sad for me. I have to tell you, very sad for me. If you ask me what the motive is, I think it's proper to say some have proffered that it's money. I really don't think that's the case because I think he has resources. I don't think that's his motivation. I honestly think this is a personal vendetta. He's very embarrassed by how the president released him and publicly criticized him. And I think this is his way of getting back and setting what he thinks is the record straight. The sad thing to me is I'm afraid it's going to destroy Secretary Bolton. I just afraid he's it's self-destruction, and that's not a happy thing for me. As a matter of fact, this really struck me. I'm going to skip down, guys, to clip 13 because another friend. I don't often tell you who the people are that I know, but I have been open about these two, and so I think I should say that Senator Sessions, when he was senator, was also I considered him a friend, and I very strong affection and admiration for him, and so that was a tough pass too when he was disappointing in the way he handled all the corruption going on after the president was elected. But last night he was with Shannon Bream, and this is what he said. I want you to hear it. This is clip 13.
When I left the Department of Justice, people descended on me to write books, to be long interviews. You can tell your side of the story. You can push back. But I believe that when you serve an administration, a president, you want him to succeed. You want to help him be successful. And if he feels at any point that someone else can do the job better, that's perfectly right for him to change those positions. And you shouldn't be in a fight with them. It's unprofessional. It undermines the ability of the government to function effectively. And even if this information in Mr. Bolton's book, and I know John well. I don't think I think he's a patriot, but I just got to say, any smart intelligence operative, even if it doesn't have top secret information in it, can divine policies, tendencies, ideas of the United States government, and could help them in their activities.
So that's vintage. Now I got to think about what to call him, General Sessions, former General Sessions. That is, you know, the kind of wisdom that he has always offered. You know, he went through something similar, and his admonition to Bolton is, don't do that. Don't do that. That's unseemly. You're putting the danger, the country at risk. And I think he's right about that, and that would be my message to Secretary Bolton as well. You know, one other speculation is that one of the reasons the Democrats want this trial to continue in the Senate is that they, one of the many reasons, and probably a big one, is this long, drawn-out trial would prevent the Senate from confirming more judicial nominees, and specifically and particularly a Supreme Court nominee if something should happen in the next few months. The Senate will be completely gridlocked as it is now, unable to do any kind of business, any business for the people whatsoever, because it's all enthralled in impeachment and all these hearings. So they're going to be voting tomorrow. By the way, I want to tell you some other things. This talk about a big next few days. This is a big next few days. Today, the arguments, completion of the arguments and questions with the Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, you know, being like the host of this game show. That's not funny, but that's what he is doing. And then tomorrow they will take the vote. Tomorrow is also Brexit in Great Britain. Tomorrow is the day. By midnight tomorrow night, British time, it will be the departure of the Great Britain from the European Union. That's amazing. And on Sunday, all right, is the Super Bowl. Could I just mention? Sunday is the Super Bowl. On Monday, it is the Iowa caucuses, which from all accounts, it looks as Bernie Sanders has taken the lead. That's pretty stunning. And so that's going to be happening on Monday. We'll all be following that. And then on Tuesday evening, if all goes according to plan, it will be the President of the United States' State of the Union address. Yeah, I mean, I just seems like things just keep happening bigger, faster. Who can keep up, really? So we're trying, and we need to as best we can. You can't just give up. Please don't do that. And I'm glad that you don't. That's why you tuned in this morning. So I have a lot more to tell you, a lot of things about what I heard from the presentations last night, the question and answer period, one particular point I want to make with you. So stay tuned, and if we have time, we're going to open the phone lines, but I have to tell you this stuff first, okay? All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming fast, and we still have a few spaces left.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming to Pine Cove Camp near Tyler, Texas, March 31st through April the 2nd. The retreat is 3 days of relaxation and encouragement for pastors and their wives. It's a chance to address the challenges which are unique to a pastor's family. Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word on AFR and his wife Jan will host the event. Our special speaker will be Dan Celia of Financial Issues, and it happens midweek, so you won't even need to miss a Sunday service. Materials, meals, and lodging are included in the cost of registration. But hurry, space is limited to just 30 couples. Learn more and register at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net. Or call 662-844-5036, extension 300.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat. We'll see you there. This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Kelly Kraft, United States Ambassador to the United Nations. Ms. Kraft represents the United States on the UN Security Council. James 1:19 reminds us of the importance of being a good representative. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Kelly Kraft as she represents our country at the United Nations. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Freedom-loving Virginians may be one step closer to leaving the Commonwealth and becoming a part of West Virginia. Liberty University President Jerry Falwell Jr. and West Virginia Governor Jim Justice urged unhappy Virginia counties to secede after Democrats claimed control of the Virginia State House and began curtailing the First and Second Amendment rights of citizens. They're calling the plan a vexit. Governor Justice, a Republican, says West Virginia stands strongly behind the Second Amendment. Meanwhile, Virginia's governor wants to eliminate student aid for online students, a decision that will directly impact thousands of Liberty University students. Falwell says the legal groundwork for secession was laid during the Civil War. It's still a long shot. Counties would still have to obtain permission from the legislatures in both states as well as Congress. But petition drives have already been launched by angry Virginians, sending a message to their government that they will not be trod upon. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, I will be meeting President Zelensky. He and President Trump have already spoken twice. President called to congratulate President Zelensky on his election and then on his success in the parliamentary election. They were very warm and cordial calls. We're hoping that they'll be able to meet in Warsaw and have a few minutes together.
That was John Bolton in August of 2019, just recently, not long after those phone calls. And, of course, Secretary Bolton had a different take on the interaction between the president and the president of Ukraine in that moment. And that's what people are kind of pointing to today. And I think it's kind of neutralizing the purported damage that his upcoming book will do about those conversations. He's not the only person that gave contradictory messages, though. Adam Schiff has given plenty. As a matter of fact, back in what? I think this was 2005. Oh, this is actually not the clip I meant. This, but that's all right. This goes back to 2005, and they were considering the nomination of John Bolton to be part of the Bush team, and this is what Adam Schiff said at that time.
particularly given the history where we've had the politicization of intelligence over WMD, why we would pick someone who the very same issue has been raised repeatedly, and that is John Bolton's politicization of the intelligence he got on Cuba and on other issues. Why would we want someone with that lack of credibility, I can't understand.
Yeah, he's on record, Adam Schiff, criticizing John Bolton many, many times besides that, even in more powerful ways. So, but now he thinks he's wonderful and he has incredible credibility. And by the way, I think John has incredible credibility, too. I think John is had his ego badly bruised, and his knowledge of national security and the international world is his stock in trade. And he feels very dissed, I think, by President Trump. And so this is his kind of... he's acting out moment. It's not good. It's not good. And like I said, I'm afraid it's going to hurt him terribly and not hurt the president. That's the bad part. So he wants to hurt the president, but he's hurting himself. That's what I think. So you ask me and I'm telling you. All right. So I want to go down to the heart, though, of this back and forth yesterday. There were a lot of things to say about it. As a matter of fact, let me commend to you a really good article on Fox yesterday. Fox, usually their articles on the homepage are like brief and good, but, you know, not in depth. But this is in depth. This is Greg Rhee, who's a Fox News reporter. It gives you a ton of information on what happened in the Q&A back and forth yesterday. And the headline is Justice Roberts blocks Senator Paul from naming whistleblower. And Paul may force the issue. Now, there's a lot more in the article besides that. We'll put that on our Facebook page. But I want to tell you that what happened, John Roberts, how shall I start with this? The whistleblower, I've told you, is Eric Chiaramella. And you also know that the members of the House, no one's able to say his name. Everyone's been blocked from doing that. And so John Roberts presiding over this proceeding would not allow any questions about the whistleblower, was blocking that. So some senators kind of rebelled against that because ultimately the Chief Justice does not have control in that body. He does in the moment kind of running things, but he can be overruled. So several senators said, wait a second. We have to have questions about this. And John Roberts backed off. When he backed off, then a question was submitted about this whistleblower. And let's listen to Justice Roberts ask the question, clip 8.
The question is directed to counsel for the president. Is it true that Sean Misko, Abigail Grace, and the alleged whistleblower were employed by or detailed to the National Security Council during the same time period between January 20, 2017 and the present? Do you have reason to believe that they knew each other? Do you have any reason to believe that the alleged whistleblower and Misko coordinated to fulfill their reported commitment to, quote, do everything we can to take out the president, end quote?
All right, I told you last week, now this is a complicated story, but bottom line, Eric Chiaramella and Sean Misko both served on the National Security Council. They were overheard by several people talking about taking the president down. He has to be stopped. Did they heard a press briefing or a briefing to the National Security Council by General Flynn early on, and were heard very plainly and openly talking about this. And so it turns out Sean Misko then goes to work for Adam Schiff. And then it turns out that the whistleblower, it seems from all accounts, especially like from people like Devin Nunes, the whistleblower actually went to Adam Schiff's committee to sort of coordinate with them his little complaint, which, by the way, was allowed to be presented even though it was secondhand. It wasn't firsthand knowledge. And it was Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who was the one on the call, who allegedly, well, you see, the reason I know these things is because of people that know these things. And one person that's written all about it is Paul Sperry, and Real Clear Investigations. We'll put his piece back on our Facebook page, because if you want all the details, they're there. Vindman was a longtime friend of Chiaramella and Sean Misko as well. And as you trace the story of how this developed, it's just pretty shocking. And the attorney that ends up representing Chiaramella, the whistleblower, is Mark Zaid. And back in 2017, he openly admitted in a tweet that the coup against the president had started. And he also said that CNN will play a key role in the effort. This is the attorney for the whistleblower. Additionally, Zaid acknowledged that the whistleblower had contact with prominent Democratic presidential contender, that's Joe Biden, because the whistleblower worked for Joe Biden. So did the other people. They were all affiliated with Joe Biden working on Ukraine. And remember when the inspector general brought this whistleblower, you know, this anonymous whistleblower forward, he said that he might have some, political motivations, but we were not allowed to talk about it. And I want to read to you, well, I'll just tell you, there is the interaction between the inspector general and the questioning by the in the House. Took place behind closed doors, off the record. And of all the papers and information of the many hours of testimony in that body and bringing impeachment against the president, that is the one document that Adam Schiff will not allow. He will not allow it to be unclassified. And so many of them keep referring to it because they know that the connection implicates Adam Schiff. That's why the Republicans keep saying Adam Schiff should be a witness. Because he does know who the whistleblower is, in spite of what he says. And we think his committee was up to their ears in helping to plot all of this. And I will kind of explain that. Let's see. We have a clip from Adam Schiff. I'm sorry, I'm getting myself confused here. Let's clip 7. I want you to hear what Adam Schiff had to say on the floor just yesterday about the whistleblower. Let's listen.
Let me be clear about several things about the whistleblower. First of all, I don't know who the whistleblower is. I haven't met them. Or communicated with them in any way. The committee staff did not write the complaint or coach the whistleblower what to put in the complaint. The committee staff did not see the complaint before it was submitted to the inspector general. The committee, including its staff, did not receive the complaint until the night before acting director of national intelligence. We had an open hearing with the active director on September 26th. More than 3 weeks after the legal deadline by which the committee should have received the complaint.
Yeah, so, and then he goes on to, you know, talk about how the whistleblower is in danger of his life, et cetera, et cetera. And there's been a lot of misinterpretation about how a whistleblower should be handled. You know, talking about how he can't be mentioned. We can't talk about him. And every time it comes up, Adam Schiff jumps up to block the conversation. He did that in the House as well. So, Rand Paul is really ticked about this, and he was really ticked at the Chief Justice for not allowing any general questions even about the whistleblower. The Chief Justice was blocking those, and so Rand Paul wasn't having it. And so he was actually so angry that he was heard in the gallery by people saying, I'm not going to be prevented from speaking. I will be heard about this. And so it'll be interesting to see today how that plays out. John Roberts asked that question then because he was rebuked. He did finally ask the question about the whistleblower. And I want you to hear a bit of how Patrick Philbin, one of the president's attorneys, responded. This is clip 9.
Mr. Chief Justice, senators, the only knowledge that I have of this comes from public reports. I gather that there is a news report in some publication that suggests a name for the whistleblower, suggests where he worked, that he worked at that time while detailed the NSC staff for then Vice President Biden, and that there were others who worked there. We have no knowledge of that other than what's in those public reports, and I don't want to get into speculating about that. It is something that an unknown extent may have been addressed in the testimony of the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community before Chairman Schiff's committees, but that testimony, contacts with the whistleblower, contacts between members of Manager Schiff's staff and the whistleblower, are shrouded in secrecy to this day. We don't know what the testimony of the ICIG was. It remains secret. It has not been forwarded. We don't know what Manager Schiff's staff's contact with the whistleblower have been and what connections there are there. It's something that would seem to be relevant since the whistleblower started this entire inquiry. But I can't make any representations that we have particular knowledge of the facts suggested in the question. We know that there was a public report suggesting connections and prior working relationships between certain people. Not something that I can comment on other than to say that there's a report there We don't know what the ICIG discussed. We don't know what the ICIG was told by the whistleblower. Other public reports about inaccuracies in the whistleblower's report to the ICIG, we don't know the testimony on that. We don't know the situation of the contacts, coordination, advice provided by Manager Schiff's staff to the whistleblower. That all remains unknown. But something that obviously, to get to the bottom of motivations, bias, how this was all, this inquiry was all created, could potentially be relevant.
Yeah, so that was Patrick Philbin. I thought he did a great job. And of course, he couldn't go into the details because it's not in the record. And that's what the Republicans are trying to get into the record. By the way, a federal law on whistleblowers protects them only from retaliation in the workplace. It does not ensure their anonymity. And so I just think that's an important point to make. And I want to read to you, this is exactly, I don't have the recording of this handy, but during the impeachment hearing in the House, when Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was being questioned, he was asked by Devin Nunes, did you discuss the July 25th phone call between Trump and Ukraine's president with anyone outside the White House? And if so, with whom? Yes, I did, Vindman said, who also claimed not to know the whistleblower's identity. He said he had spoken to Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent, but before he could mention the other person, Schiff jumped up, intervened, these are my words, I remember it, and urgently blocked the questioning. This is what he said. We need to protect the whistleblower. Please stop. I want to make sure that there is no effort to out the whistleblower through these proceedings. If the witness has a good faith belief that this may reveal the identity of the whistleblower, that is not the purpose that we're here for. I want to advise the witness accordingly. And so he's been fiercely guarding him, and we think he's been fiercely guarding him because he's up to his ears in having plotted with the whistleblower. He knows very well who he is. So did Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who lied under oath about that. And so I'm telling you, nobody's declared that. I'm telling you he lied under oath. You can read Paul Sperry's full investigation of that from Real Clear Politics. And by the way, American Family Association, our AFA Action, which is our sister organization, which is the 501c4, is asking our listeners and our people who sign up for our alerts to give a call to your senators today and to vote no on calling impeachment trial witnesses, and to vote no, a yes on acquitting the president. First of all, no on witnesses, and yes to acquit the president. So could you do that today, please? Call your senator and ask them to vote no on witnesses and to vote yes on acquitting the president. Those are two things. And by the way, if you haven't ever signed up for these action alerts, they're sent to you in measured dose. You will not be overwhelmed, and it provides a way for you to communicate with them, your senator and your congressman directly without you having to look up the number and all of that. So it's afaaction.net, afaaction.net for more information. And you'll be hearing more about that as the day goes by and as you're listening. All right. So that's kind of an overview of what happened yesterday, just a tiny little bit of it. And I'd love to talk to you because if you watched it or if you saw it, or if you have a comment about something that we've talked about already, we would welcome your phone call. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. It does look, if I didn't say this specifically, it does look as though Senator McConnell has blocked or persuaded the Republicans to hold together. I think Susan Collins and Mitt Romney are still going to vote in favor of witnesses. But we can't be sure. We don't know until this morning. I mean, anything can change. And remember John McCain's, famous vote against doing away with Obamacare, remember? And he did very dramatically. He told him he was going to vote in favor of repealing it, and instead he voted no. So you never know what they're going to do. You just don't. So it'd be a good thing to make phone calls to your senators, and that is something that you actually can do. I know you can. All right, we'll take phone calls in a second. 888-589-8840 is the number. 888-589-8840. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
for people will be lovers of self. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Vicky Spratt is a feminist writer for the women's lifestyle site Refinery29. She gave voice to collective feminist angst in an emotional, several-thousand-word essay bemoaning the men who refuse to pursue romantic relationships with so-called woke women. She went on to spout the entire panoply of cultural Marxist tropes, blaming men for everything from murder and racism on to the continued oppression of the entire female sex. To the extent that sex still exists, of course. She literally conveyed her utter disdain for men, yet remained stunned that men don't want a woman who hates men. Go figure.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Proverbs 14:14. The backslider in heart will be filled with his own ways, but a good man will be satisfied from above. Being filled up with our own ways and ourself and our agenda, and we can make a mess of life, and that's not a lot to walk away with positively. Be satisfied with the Lord and set your priorities on the things above.
Exploring the Word, weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The scripture makes clear that government is God's idea, not man's, and that he has given to government authority to punish criminal behavior. What happens when government does not do its job? In Ecclesiastes 8:11, we are told, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. When the law is not enforced, evil is allowed to run free and grow in strength. Regressives are rolling back restraints against evil, and the results are entirely predictable. A bank robber in New York was arrested for holding up four banks, but because of brainless bail reform laws, he was immediately set free. What did he do? Next day, he robbed another bank. He said, "I can't believe they let me out. What were they thinking?" My question, exactly.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One of President Trump's most important yet least applauded initiatives is an executive order he issued last March to protect our electric grid and other critical infrastructure from electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, attacks that could destroy these assets and our country. Yesterday, I had the privilege of observing firsthand a very exciting and promising effort to operationalize the president's guidance. Local government officials, the business community, and leaders of the nation's largest military base have joined forces to have San Antonio, Texas, become the first city in the country to make its grid resilient against EMP and other threats. While much remains to be done, their shared commitment to create a template for action that will protect San Antonio's infrastructure and people and serve as a model for the rest of Texas and America is as exhilarating as it is urgently needed. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Oh, Sandy Rios back with you. Yeah, we're going to go to the phone lines in just a second. Let me just do a little bit of conversating here first. I want to thank several of you who I mentioned last week that I could not find a PBS documentary on the Weather Underground. It wasn't available online anymore, and several of you dug for me and found links. Some of them were not quite right, but a couple of them were. Let me just give a shout-out to Bruce, who found it, and we're going to put the link on our Facebook page. Maybe we'll revisit this on a different day because it's incredible. It's about an hour and a half long, and I just think that you will want to watch it. You will want to watch it. We'll put it again on our Facebook page, and I want to thank all of you for helping me in that way. I really do appreciate it. We also we're kind of a family, listening family. I got another a follow up from our Northern Ireland buddy Phil. And Phil, thank you. That's so sweet. I loved reading this, so I'm going to read part of it to you. Phil listens to Northern Ireland, and he wrote for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and I read his email, and it was just kind of fun. This is what he said. I was ironing the kids' uniforms for school and normally load your podcast and listen whenever I get spare time. Me and my wife, I wish I could do your accent, but I don't dare, so I'm not going to do it. But I can hear you in my head. Me and my wife, Amanda, were in the kitchen, and when I heard you read the listener's email, I kind of had a feeling it was mine. But I made a big play for Amanda out of what Phil could possibly be talking about. The penny soon dropped with her, and we both had a right laugh about it. So thank you. It will be a good memory. And now, you're now a household name here, which is fun. He talks about his family. He says, I want to share this with all of you, too. In terms of me and my faith, I've had a great landing over the past few years. After the birth of my first son, something clicked in me saying that there has to be a God. And he said, so I didn't act straight away. It wasn't until trying to download a podcast about Murder, She Wrote, please don't laugh, Jessica's a national treasure everywhere, that I landed on Cold Case Christianity by J. Warner Wallace, and that changed everything for me. And then he says, you see, my mom wasn't a believer in God because of the troubles. Yeah, Northern Ireland surely had its share of troubles. She says, so when I was young, that was a kind of green light for me to question the RE teachers in school and be the smart blank kid in class who didn't believe in God. I'm an engineer, so I suppose I would have to say back then I was technically and scientifically minded and mature enough to know my own mind. Jim Wallace was a right wake-up call to all that, using science and evidence to show God's stamp on everything. And then he goes on to say he went from J. Wallace to our own Frank Turek, and then that through Frank Turek he found Sandy Rios in the morning. So it's actually a really, really nice story, Phil. It's great. You just encourage me, and it's just fun, isn't it, to reach out across the miles and have that kind of a connection. So let me just go to one other quickly. This is from Josh, who writes often. Josh feels the opposite on almost everything, and yet he listens, and I've corresponded with him just a little bit. But he says, in this darkest of hours for our democracy, you chose to spend fewer than 10 minutes at the top of your show, this is last week, on the Senate impeachment trial. Here is a president who is not just credibly but overwhelmingly accused of corruption and wrongdoing, of abusing the power of his office for personal political gain, of undermining our nation's faith in the fairness of our elections, and you kind of breezily pushed it aside in less than the time it takes me to commute to work. And then he goes on and talks about this man, this fraud, does not deserve the office he holds. He will be like Thanos, an ethics-free monster with unlimited power supported by yes men. This is the story you need to be telling your listeners. Encourage them to listen to the trial and make up their own minds about whether they can, in good conscience, continue to support Trump. Josh, I read this because I wanted to say to you, I know that you're a smart guy and you like to read and think. I think, as I recall, you're a teacher. But as I didn't read most of your email here, but what you basically said to me in this email are talking points that the Democrats use all the time. I don't know if you realize that or not, but as smart as you are repeating other people's thoughts. You do it effectively, but it makes me think you're not really thinking. And so I just want to challenge you to kind of think out of the box. You might even want to, you know, write something where you pretend like you're on our side and try writing something like that, just so that you can have the exercise of thinking other thoughts besides what obviously you're absorbing. And also I just want to challenge your intellect. I'm always surprised that you listen and very grateful. So I just hope you'll keep listening. Josh interacts with many of you on Facebook. But I'm glad. There can't be anything bad about that. I'm very glad. I'm happy to have opposition. I wish we had more time, you and I, to talk about all of these things. I want to go to the phones, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Let's go to Rebecca in Arkansas. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Sandy. I watched practically the whole thing yesterday. It was
I just felt so stimulated by it, and I feel protective of our president, and I just had to know what questions were being asked and how they were being answered. And I think the president's defense team is doing a wonderful job. I became, though, a little concerned about Alan Dershowitz. I loved his presentation day before yesterday, but he's bringing into it an element that maybe the president's motives were not pure. He says there's no cause for impeachment, no matter what. But he's putting an element of doubt in there as to the president doing it for the good of the country, you know, selflessly, that perhaps another reason could be for his own political good. It could be a combination. And that troubled me because I was beginning to, it just was beginning to pull me away.
Really?
From my wholehearted support of the president.
Really?
And I saw the Democrats, I really admired the way Adam Schiff was explaining things. I thought he is just rising to the occasion and being so masterful, telling lies, but so masterfully. And it seemed as though they were gaining steam toward the end of the afternoon and into the evening. They were becoming, I could tell they were getting tired, and they weren't getting the words out quite as well by the evening.
Yeah.
But I thought they're putting a big push on to turn people. And I was praying that people would not be swayed.
Yeah, Rebecca, thanks a lot. I'm going to have to, let me just let you go and I'll respond. But thank you for those thoughts. And I'm glad you watched it and gave us that report. I did not, my impression, of course, I didn't watch it all like you did. I didn't feel like they were swaying people. I just felt like they were getting kind of desperate. I would say this about Alan Dershowitz. He's trying to he's making a reasoned argument. And probably, Rebecca, I'm guessing that you and many others, your emotions are with President Trump. Not that you don't have reason, but there's nothing wrong with like backing up and just analyzing something. Dershowitz is basically saying that all presidents have mixed motives, and what's it's not impeachable to think that some decision might be good for the country and good for you as well. And he gave several illustrations of that and, you know, sort of speculations about that, about what Barack Obama did, decisions he made. So he's using arguments of reason like a professor would. I didn't have a problem with it. You need to be able to reason through any possibility. Don't be afraid of things that challenge your assumptions or your emotions. I just find that you just need to think through all of it. Don't be afraid of that. So think it through, Rebecca. Let's go to Michelle in Oklahoma. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
So I wanted to say I'm glad you're back. I've missed you the last 2 days. I listen every morning on my way to work.
Thank you.
As far as what's going on politically, I'm tired of all the hearsay. Everybody's saying what Trump meant when he said what he said. But so far, nobody's actually heard what Trump said. They've just read from a transcript. I'd like to hear the phone call that transcript came from, because if there's a transcript, there's a recording somewhere.
Yeah, well, I think pretty much,
and
Michelle,
then
my understanding,
can decide for themselves.
Yeah, but why would, is the transcript not enough for you? You want to hear his tone of voice, or what is it you think you'll pick up?
Because I don't know if the transcript is even accurate, first of all. This is all piled up evidence
I'm talking quick because we have to hurry because there's so many people on. Think of it this way. If Lieutenant Colonel Vindman or the others on the call, or Eric Chiaramella, the whistleblower, I thought there was more incriminating things on that phone call than is in that transcript. You can take it to the bank. You would know about it, Michelle. So I guarantee you the worst parts are in that transcript, or we would know about it. They're not going to protect him. They were there. Vindman was listening and transcribing it. So, and he's not a friend of the president. So I think that that's probably an unfounded concern. All right, let's go to Cindy in Texas. Good morning, Cindy. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. I, too, listen on my way to work and have missed you the last couple of days. I don't always hear the entire show, but I appreciate everything you stand for. And I will be calling my senator today, as you suggested a few moments ago. But my primary reason for calling was because of is backpedaling a little bit to sanctity of human life. And I've tried to call several times and not gotten in. I was shocked when I got in today. But anyway, my point is I am a nursing professor and a healthcare provider. And I am concerned that I never hear on any of the American Family Radio or anything when we talk about sanctity of human life, no one wants to touch the issue of aborted fetal tissue in vaccines. And,
Cindy, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Listen, I've made public, not here, you're right, on this. I don't think I've ever talked about it on the mic here, but I've certainly done press conferences way back on that. And I promise to come back to that. And we'll write that down. But I need to keep on impeachment right now, okay? Cindy, thank you. We will get to that, I promise. Let's go to Vicki in Ohio. Good morning, Vicki.
Hi.
You watched it, huh?
Yeah, we watched it, and my question is, the House managers brought up this, they listed, I don't know if it was the New York Times or whatever, but that President Trump has lied over 10,000 times.
Yes.
They listed some number, and I'm like, what are they talking about? Because for me, Trump is just out there with it. He doesn't mince words. He just says what's in his mind with no filter. I find it very hard to believe that they've caught him in more than 10,000 lies.
Well, it's silly. It's silly. It's like, you know, who counts the, except Media Research Center will monitor the news and count words and stuff, but who could possibly do that? And I think what they call lies with the president is sometimes he's careless with his words. He's not precise. And they will call that words. They'll call that lies. I actually think he's stunningly honest, and that's what they hate about him. He says what he thinks, and that's just way too much information for them, or way too abrasive, because they're like the gentleman of the Senate, and they have to show decorum. So they like to lie with nice, smooth voices. He doesn't do that. Vicki, thanks. Good point. Let's go to Sherry in Mississippi. Good morning, Sherry. It's all girls this morning. Good morning, Sherry.
Hi, Sandy. I have been listening to you for quite some time, and I feel like it's the only way I can get the truth besides Fox News. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
One thing I have to say is, although I know that calling witnesses will do nothing to support the Democratic case, that this impeachment is political as well, and the fact that the Democratic media is going to turn it and twist it to make it look like we're covering up. So if we were to call witnesses, would that allow us to get Hunter Biden and get all the truth about the scam and the corruption that they're pointing fingers, but it's really four fingers pointing back at them? Can we expose them by calling witnesses?
Well, that's actually the thought of many people want on our side, meaning supporters of President Trump would like to see the trial prolonged. For that very reason, Sherry, and part of me does too. I addressed this a little bit earlier, but I'll say again, the problem is you're playing with fire, because if the wrong thing should happen in the impression, the president will be out and it will be over. This is a high stakes game. It's like it might be right to continue it, but it could be there could be hearings, there could be Senate hearings about the misdeeds of this whistleblower and his conspirators and Adam Schiff later that don't risk removing the president. That's really my thought about it, too. That's what I think, for what it's worth. Hey, thanks so much for listening. I'm sorry we had to rush this morning. Be back tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.